Several years ago, a friend of mine was the priest in an Episcopal church in rural northern Alabama. And word came that the Ku Klux Klan was going to stage a rally in town. Now, the Klan does not have the strength of decades past, having been supplanted by many other violent white supremacist groups. But they still exist, and from time to time, they still attempt to instill fear and bring terror upon those who do not fit their narrow band of white Protestant heterosexuality. At first, it was unclear as to what was going to happen. Some thought the town should just hunker down and wait for them to pass through. Right? Don't give them the attention that they seek. Others talked about physical confrontation, about fighting back against the hatred hand to hand. Anxious emails flew, the talk around town was of little else. In the midst of this uncertainty and anxiety, my friend decided to approach a minister of a Black Baptist congregation. "The church I serve," my friend said, "would like to know if we could stand with you when the Klan comes to town. Whatever seems right, we would like to do it with you." The minister of the Baptist congregation teared up. He hadn't expected to be approached by a largely white church in town in this way. He expected that they were going to have to go it alone. And from that conversation, a plan was hatched, one that changed the course of many lives in that small town in Alabama. Because the Klan did come, dressed in their robes and in their hoods, spewing hate against African Americans, against immigrants, against those who are LGBT. But what they found seemed to catch them off guard. Because their rally did draw hundreds of people, just not in the way they expected. You see, for days leading up to the rally, residents of this small rural town had been gathering together, preparing for how they would encounter this hate, what they would do to counteract it. Their response? They lined the roads leading to the center of town. They ringed the stage where the rally was held. But rather than yell back or overpower the Klan with their larger numbers, the residents of this town actually stood silently, many with tape across their mouths. Instead of confronting the hate-filled rhetoric with louder voices, they let their signs that they held up by the hundreds do the talking. The signs simply read, "Love wins." It was a short rally. And then the Klan members left town. It seems as if this parable, yet another in Luke's gospel about prayer, could not come at a more fit time for us. Remember, our passage this week begins, "Then Jesus told them a parable about the need to pray always and not to lose heart." Not to lose heart. These past few weeks have been, well, trying. As what began as an attempt to render defunct the Affordable Health Care Act turned into a partisan pitched battle that put hundreds of thousands at risk and threatened to sabotage almost the world economy. I have to say, it feels hard not to lose heart when those who lead this country politically find it almost impossible to seek common ground. And when those who lead this country financially continue to show little respect or regard for a common life that approximates equality. So I do find it heartening this week to hear a parable like this one, a parable that has the possibility to change the way we encounter the world. A certain judge has no fear of God and little care for the people he serves. Two great commandments thwarted in one short sentence. Right? A widow, one of the most vulnerable in ancient society, has been wronged. She comes expecting justice. He just wants her to go away. Right? What can she do for him? And yet she will not leave, even though it is clear that he recognizes no authority higher than his own and cares not a thing for anyone outside of himself. Even though there is little reason for her to carry on, she does. Day after day, she comes to court pleading her case. Finally, fed up with her badgering, the Greek word here was often used about boxers, so think about repeated jabs, right? Not a knockout punch. Finally, the judge relents, if for no other reason that she will stop wearing him out. Widow gets justice. It's a good ending, a great story, but a little strange about God. And besides praying more, which is always a good thing, but besides praying more, how might this parable help us to not lose heart? A while ago, there were three boys in my son's class who were known as the hitters. The hitters. Unfortunately, this had nothing to do with their skill on a baseball diamond. It was instead because they hit other children. Right? It was a tactic they used when, because of frustration or anger or fear, probably all the above, they chose to lash out at one of their classmates, and often when others were not around. Now, I am thankful, as you might imagine, that my son wasn't hit. Right? And one guess is because he was almost always with someone else, playing games or making up stories. You see, bullies almost always go after the vulnerable, those who are separated from the rest of the pack, those without someone else to count on. When they see that you're with others, or maybe that someone else is with you, often they move on. So even though my son wasn't targeted by the hitters, we had conversations about what to do when you see a classmate alone, without someone to play wall ball, or if they're just by themselves at lunch. Right? We talked about how being protected yourself is a good thing. But when others are being singled out, picked on, we wondered, what can you do to stand with them? Right? Now, this wasn't just a conversation for grade school friends, right? I mean, we know this goes on and on. Because bullying doesn't stop in the first grade, or in the seventh grade, or in the 11th grade, or in college, or when you get your first job, or when you are trying to love someone, or when you just want to be left alone. It continues whenever there is indifference to authority higher than oneself and disregard for those who are seen to be below. It seems to me that there are other characters in this parable that might not at first be visible. For it's fairly easy to conjure up this unjust judge and this persistent widow. But just as in northern Alabama and on the schoolyard, often there are others who are watching and waiting, not knowing whether they should get involved. For it is far easier for me to list the reasons why I don't want to get involved, why I need not give of myself. It is far safer to watch from the sidelines, decrying the tactics, mourning for the victims, and stopping there. But again, this kind of destruction is often visited upon the vulnerable, for unjust judges don't go after those who have joined together. And so, what if following the witness of this persistent widow, what if this parable was to lead us into a particular form of prayer? What if one way for faith to be revealed now and at the consummation of all time is by our persistent resistance against the structures and forces that diminish and deform the creatures of God? Persistence. Persistence to continue to engage even as the outcome is unclear. And resistance. Resistance to the injustice and the cruelty that stalks our friends and neighbors and ourselves. Resistance by standing alongside the vulnerable so that those who are preyed upon will not have to face it alone. In the end, friends, I believe that it comes to this. We in this family of All Souls Parish have been gifted in many, many ways. With educations, with finances, with life-giving families, with gathered wisdom, with generous hearts, with cultural authority, with persistent faith. And so as the guide of this congregation, I have the sense that we are at a crossroads, a place where many possible paths branch out, right? And we have the possibility to stand with those who are vulnerable, with those who the unjust judge dismisses with a wave of the hand, who are the targets of hate, who are afraid of the empty corners of the schoolyard. Right? And when we do this, we do not ride in on a white horse. It's always a white horse, isn't it? No. This is not to save from above, but to be present with, to listen and to stand alongside. We will not engage in this alone, but we will join in with those who have already begun this work and who are looking for partners. And like all things that truly matter, it will take all of us. It will take you, it will take me, our time, our gifts, and yes, our money. Right? Because some will be working upstream to stop the flow at the source, while others will work to bring people to shore. Some of us will be physically present, leading with our voices and with our hands. Others will be behind the scenes, writing letters, making phone calls. All of us will be praying, standing together, finding faith on this earth.